This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome to The Gardening Show. Phone lines indeed are open, and we are also on Facebook Live. So make sure to, if you'd like to comment that way or ask Bob a question, you can leave a comment on facebook.com/WESB1075 in our live video that's starting now. And then, hey, you can also do it the old-fashioned way there with a phone call. What's on your mind today, Bob?
We talked a little bit about last week. I don't know if it was on the air or off the air.
Yeah, we talk so much after the show, too.
We just stay
in here and chit-chat away for about an hour or so sometimes.
We do, yes. Wanted to talk about when to harvest certain things in your vegetable garden. And I want to start off with the tomato, because there's a lot of advice out there on the internet. But I've said it before, you know, Bradford's a little bit different. A lot of that advice comes from locations that don't quite have the weather that we do.
Yeah, different climate. The whole thing's different.
Yeah.
Different soil and everything.
True. Yep. Yep. We're a little tougher here, I think.
We don't get enough sun. That's what I noticed.
Yeah, we don't.
Those mountains are too high. The sun peaks a little too early for my enjoyment. But oh well. And for a lot of plants, enjoyment, too. They prefer a little bit more sun. Well, that's why it's a little different, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So I want to start off with a tomato. I see a lot of that internet advice saying, you know, pick them, bring them in, let them ripen. And I have to disagree with that fully. If we knew a frost was or a freeze was coming, yes, go ahead and pick them. Bring them in, and you can ripen them on a countertop or in a paper bag with a slice of apple. That will ripen them quickly. But if the weather permits, leave them on, we call it the vine, leave them on the plant as long as possible and let them sun ripen. That makes for a lot more flavor in the tomato. I can't stress that enough. You can really tell the difference between a sun-ripened tomato and a tomato that's ripened by other means, you know, and in the store. And I'm not picking on stores saying that that they're bad, but their tomatoes, you know, because of shipping and so on, they're picked green, and then they're put into big storage lockers. And then when an order comes out for them to ship to a store, in that locker, ethylene gas is introduced in there, and that makes them ripen quickly. Well, that same thing's going to happen with you in the brown paper bag and a slice of apple. As soon as you slice that apple, it starts giving off ethylene gas and ripens that vegetable that's in the bag with them.
So that's why it tastes so different. It's sun-ripened.
Yes. And then
the good ones.
The ones we have in our garden, you know, if you leave them on the vine to ripen by the sun and ripen slowly with all the nutrients from that plant going back into that tomato fruit, it's going to be a lot more flavorful and a lot more nutritious. Tomato can be very, very nutritious if it's sun ripened. So keep that in mind. But of course, if the weatherman says a frost is coming, then go ahead and pick those green tomatoes and bring them in. I'd like to say more about the tomato.
Well, please do. I'm not stopping you.
But my mind is going blank right now.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. So on your tomato plant, it still may be, my cough drop slipping around.
Oh, no.
It still may be putting forth new growth. And at this stage, well, thank you.
I feel like a first grade teacher. Yeah. Now, Johnny, spit out your gum.
Yeah. still may be putting forth new growth. Well, that new growth isn't going to have time to produce a good fruit. So clip off any of that new growth you see, because that's going to also put that energy that would have went to the new growth back to the fruit that's on the vine that you're trying to ripen. And again, going to become more flavorful and more nutritious for you. So I can't stress that enough. You know, leave those tomatoes on the plant as long as you can. Corn, when you go to harvest corn, that's when the silks on the top of the ear, when they dry up and start sagging down, it's time to harvest your corn. Squash, that one you can leave on the vine as long as you want. Because most of the squash, I'm talking about butternut squash, acorn squash, spaghetti squash, you can leave on the vine till you're ready to harvest it and cook it for supper. Now, it may be beneficial that if you're going to leave it out there for a while, to pick up that fruit, that squash, and place something underneath it so it isn't touching the soil to where creatures in the soil can get up there and start gnawing at it. So it can be beneficial to throw a piece of cardboard or an old chunk of carpet, anything like that, underneath that so it's not in contact with the soil. And then you can leave that squash out there for a long, long time.
That's enough to deter the creatures, huh?
Just that's all.
Thin piece of cardboard or something.
That's it. That's okay. All you need to do.
Good.
Now, the one squash that is different is the zucchini. And you want to treat zucchinis and cucumbers the same way. You want to harvest them often. And with the zucchini, everybody has their own preference, but I don't like my zucchini to get over a foot long. I like the young ones. And if you keep harvesting the zucchini and the cucumbers, they will keep producing. If you let that zucchini stay on the vine, which we've all done in the past just to see how big we can get one, well, it'll stop reproducing. You've got to harvest it to keep those female flowers coming. And to make new zucchini. So once it gets around a foot long, you know, make sure you cut that off and bring it in. They'll keep in the refrigerator, you know, for quite some time. Same with the cucumbers. The potato plant. You don't harvest that, dig your potatoes, until the top of the plant has all died back. You don't want to dig it too soon. And when you do dig it, any of those real close to the surface, if their skin is still green, you don't want to use those. You can just toss those away. There can be some poisons in there that can upset your stomach. So only save the potatoes that have that nice tan skin on them.
You know, when you say they're potatoes are poison. That reminds me, I don't know if it's an internet myth or whatever, but there was a story that potatoes improperly stored, like, killed a whole family.
That's possible, yes.
Is it really?
Yes. Yeah, because if they're exposed to sunlight or any light, that skins can start to turn green, and I don't remember the exact poison, but it starts to develop that poison. Now, normally, for most people, we're only going to eat one potato, you know. It may upset your stomach. It's not going to kill you.
Oh, okay. But the story here was that the odors or whatever, like the fumes that they gave off, was like almost like carbon monoxide-like.
Nah.
Where it killed a family.
Nah.
That's an internet myth.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Again, another one.
I figured, but yeah. I just wanted to put it out there. If you saw the same story.
Yeah.
Kind of roll your eyes and say, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's baloney.
Okay.
But, now the potatoes we produce up here in America, you know, have all been checked to make sure they're the right ones. In South America, there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties of potatoes, and some of them are highly poisonous no matter what. You know, and that always fascinated me, you know, that man 10,000 years ago was able to discover which ones to eat, which ones not to eat, because they all can look quite a bit alike. But there are ones that we won't ever see here in America.
Wow.
That grow wild in South America that are really highly poisonous.
Do they taste? I wonder if they taste bad or if they deceive you by tasting the same.
Yeah, that I can't tell you.
Well, yeah you've never had them.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, one of the popular annuals to put in your planters is the potato vine. And that will produce a potato underground. That's one of those ones you don't want to eat.
Hmm.
It'll make you sick. It won't kill you, but it will make you sick. So don't eat that potato vine. Beets, carrots, onions, garlic, you harvest them whenever you want. And to the point where I've let my carrots and beets remain in the garden, and Brussels sprouts also remain in the garden right up to Thanksgiving, even up to Christmas. And weather permitting, I can go out there and harvest them just before the meal. And that way we have real fresh and highly nutritious vegetables that way. So those crops you can leave right there.
Now, do they just kind of stop growing and then just stay in limbo for a while?
Depending on the weather. Yeah, depending on the weather. If the weather is still good, well, they'll just keep growing. And now, one other thing that I've done in the past, too, that I really wanted some Christmas carrots and beets. So, but you know that the ground is going to freeze soon. So put a nice layer of straw over those, and that'll keep that ground from freezing so that when you go to dig them, that makes it a lot easier to harvest them that way. Peppers. I like to leave some of my green peppers right on the plant, although it's recommended that that's another plant. The more you harvest the peppers, the more it will produce. But I like to, because I have a sweet tooth. So if you leave a few of those green peppers on the plant, they will eventually turn red. You know, that's one of those vegetables that we harvest and eat before it's ripe. It's really not ripe yet, a green pepper.
Really?
Yeah. But we like to do it that way, and it's fine to do it that way. But if you leave a few, they will turn a yellowish and then eventually a red, and they'll be very, very sweet and a little bit more nutrition in them too.
Now, you're telling me, so when you see like prepackaged peppers
yeah.
at a grocery store, when they have a green one, a yellow one, and a red one, those are the same
Peppers, they could just very well be the same exact pepper, but in just different stages.
Wow.
One's the green is not quite ripe yet, and of course the yellow and red are getting right to the ripe end.
And therefore are sweeter, you say?
Yes, they will develop a sweeter taste to them. And that's going to be, you know, for a lot of the plants, the longer a plant can sit on that plant and the cooler the temperature, increases the ripening process so that we can then harvest them ripe. Now, sometimes it's a little difficult because maybe we're going to be away or we're not keeping track of our vegetable garden every day, and it'll turn ripe and then start to rot right away. So we don't want that. Or some little creature, because they know, too, that ripe vegetable is going to be a little tastier than the one that isn't quite ripe yet. But it's a fun thing to do. Let a few of those peppers go to red, and I think you'll be kind of tickled, you know. Usually, I think you even pay more for the red peppers in the store than you do the green peppers, because they're a little older.
Yeah, rent's not free.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to house those things longer.
So while you're harvesting the vegetable garden, it's important, not like a flower garden, in the vegetable garden, after you've harvested all the fruits of your labor there, pull the old plant out too. You've got to get rid of the old plant, all the old foliage, because it can harbor diseases and insects in that plant that will overwinter, and then you'll have a bigger problem next year. So it's a good idea. We call it housekeeping in your vegetable garden to clean it all out, all the old plant material, put it in a compost pile or wherever you want, but get it out of the vegetable garden so that you don't carry on any diseases or insects that can harm your plant and increase in population because you left them in the garden all year. A little different from the flower gardens, you know, where we have a lot of perennials. Big debate whether to leave them there because that can support a lot of the pollinators through the winter, or do you cut it back and clean it all out? You know, that's up to you. I kind of do a little bit of both. Some plants I leave there for the birds and the pollinator insects to bed down, or whatever you want to call it, helps them last a little bit longer, helps protect them so that I can increase that population for next year. Now, if you do happen to see some perennial that is in trouble, that maybe the insects keep attacking, that maybe you want to cut way back and clean all the foliage out of the garden and throw that in the compost pile where it will destroy any of those diseases and insects that are in there. So, again, the vegetable garden, though, real important. After you're done harvesting, clean all that old plant material out of there and clean up the bed as much as possible. You can start applying a lot of the old chopped up leaves and old straw and anything that will compost down to start rejuvenating the soil, but not letting those diseases and insects affect that.
Okay.
So there is one, though, that a lot of talk about. They say, well, my cucumbers had powdery mildew, so I got to pull them out and get that rid of that plant because that powdery mildew will be in the soil. That's not true, I'm afraid. That's another one of those myths that you'll see on the internet. Powdery mildew depends on certain environmental conditions to take over. And one of them is too many leaves, not enough air circulation to where the plant can dry out through the day, and the correct temperature for the fungus. That's what powdery mildew is. It's a fungus and mold. To start growing. So don't worry about that getting in your soil. You don't have to treat your soil, although there are ways to treat your soil organically without using any chemicals, which I tend to do every year. And that's I broadcast a lot of radish seeds in my vegetable garden. Number one, they can grow quite fast. Within days, they germinate and start growing. Their leaves, they never get very tall, but their leaves spread out, and they block, what do they do? They block the sunlight from weed seeds germinating, so they can become kind of a weed barrier in there. But also, big agriculture likes to plant radishes after they've harvested their crop and leave them all winter long. Because as the radish dies off through the winter, it starts to give off a gas that fumigates the soil, just like a chemical would, although it's not a harmful chemical that comes out of the radish. So it can kill off a lot of diseases that are in the soil. So that can be kind of a fun practice to do. And radish seeds are very inexpensive. And like I said, you don't have to go through a lot of work to plant them. Just take a handful of seed and throw them out there. They'll take hold in the soil and grow. And you can harvest some when you want the radishes. But if you don't like radishes, then just leave them grow there. They're protecting the soil, and they're going to get rid of a lot of diseases through the winter so that next year you'll be a little better off.
That's one of the things I was going to say. Yeah, great. You're going to have a lot of radishes. Then you're going to be stuck with radishes. I don't like radishes.
Oh,
but yeah. They die off during the winter.
And just give off those gases. And then give off that gas.
Okay.
And kill off those diseases that might be in the in the soil.
So everybody's happy. Diseases are gone and those pesky radishes will be eliminated.
Yes, good. Yes, indeed. Okay. And then, you know, come spring, you can rototill them in. They become part of your compost that's right there in the bed already for you. And so it's a good practice.
Yeah, very cool. Can we take a short break?
And
We'll come back. Yeah, we'll thank Worth W. Smith, our sponsor, and we'll be back with more gardening advice with the master gardener, Bob Harris. It's The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
At Worth W. Smith Company, you'll find what you need when it comes to shovels, rakes, pruners, and all sorts of other gardening and landscaping tools. Why take the chance of getting splinters from old dried-up cracked handles or the frustration of fighting with the rusty, chipped cutting edges on your loppers? Their staff is always eager to lend a helping hand with getting you what you need for the project ahead. Stop and see them today at any of their 6 locations in Bradford, Olean, Salamanca, Cuba, and Eldred. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company.
And we're back with The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. If you'd like to ask the Master Gardener a question, our phone lines are open, 814-368-9372. And we're on Facebook Live as well, on facebook.com/WESB1075. If you drop a comment there, we'll see that and relay the information to Bob, and then we'll get you some advice.
Okay, I'd like to tell a little bit of a history story here of gardening. I think everybody knows of the forsythia shrub. That's a real twiggy shrub that early in the spring, when the temperatures are still quite cold, but the soil has warmed up to 40 degrees, has those beautiful yellow flowers. So here's the backstory of the forsythia. There was a Scottish gardener named William Forsythe, a showy character. And from China, a guy named Robert Fortin in the 1700s brought the forsythia from China to Europe.
All right, I already call shenanigans. I call shenanigans. There's nobody in China named Robert.
Oh.
Stop it.
Well, he was an English plant explorer. He went to China back then.
I thought that's maybe what you meant. Okay.
It became extremely popular because it was very hardy, easy to grow. You could take cuttings very easily and increase the amount of shrubs that you wanted. But it became a little bit too popular for Europe. And they started to call it a vulgar plant. When it was first brought over, only the wealthy and important people could have a forsythia, and they grew a lot of it. But then it became available to the average Joe, like me, and became too popular, so they started calling it a vulgar plant, and it lost a lot of its popularity. Now, luckily, it's come back, and we like to grow the forsythia because it tells us when spring has begun. But also that Scottish gardener, William Forsythe, I said he was a kind of a different kind of character, and because of his, all right.
Why not?
Everybody loves the bagpipes.
And by love, you mean... can barely tolerate?
No, love the bagpipes. Okay. Yeah. He became very popular and very well known and very respected, although he was kind of a shady character. And at that time, a lot of the oaks in Europe were dying off, and they needed oaks for shipbuilding. And so he came, the government, the king and so on, offered anybody a large sum of money if they could come up with a way to save the oaks. Well, Mr. Forsythe did invent something. He called it the Forsythe's plaster in 1799 and sold it to the British Navy for a huge sum. And it consisted of cow dung, lime, wood ashes, sand, soap suds, and alligator urine. And
how the heck?
Yeah.
I don't want to be the poor sucker that has to go collect alligator urine for a job.
And of course, he convinced the British Navy that this would save the oak trees so they could continue building ships. Well, it didn't. And he kind of got out of favor again because of that trick that he played. But he became a very wealthy man because of it. And that's another reason why we my mind's going blank. Something. Yeah. Hey, I'm old.
Gosh.
About the Forsythia, that's another reason why it became unpopular, because it was tied to that Scottish gardener that pulled a fast one on the British Navy.
How did he not end up in the firing line?
Yeah. How did he not? Yeah.
I guess because he had all that money.
Yep. That's true. And he was really a great horticulturist, so they kind of let it slide, I guess.
Do you think that he did it on purpose, or do you think he really believed in his own?
I think he probably really believed that it may work. It didn't, but they did save their oak. And after all, nature has a way of saving itself.
And there he is.
How can you not like the bagpipes?
Oh, I don't know, because they just drone on and on and make that noise.
They have a big bagpipe festival in Mayville every now and then, and it's just fantastic to see 100 bagpipes playing all at once. It'll really blow your mind. But I'm talking about plants and gardening.
So the Forsythia has the history of it fell out of favor because it was associated with this charlatan from Scotland.
Yeah, charlatan, and just became too available, now it's back in favor again.
Good.
And we love our Forsythia. And again, you know, that's one of those ones that is a sign of that spring is here when it starts blooming a beautiful yellow.
Only a couple minutes left in the show, so
okay.
If you have any final thoughts.
I got a real quick one with the lilac. Everyone thinks that's a true American plant. Well, that's from Turkey. The lilac, it's an Arabic name meaning blue, and it dates back to the 1500s. And quite often you can still see a lilac growing out in a field where there's nothing else. You can guarantee that there was a home or a homestead right there. The lilac will outlive the home, so that now it has really become an American plant, even though it was originally from Turkey. That's the lilac.
All right. Very good. And with that, we end the gardening show once again, and we'll be back next week. Yes?
Yes.
Good.
Sure.
Okay. Wonderful. And well, that is it. And we'll take your phone calls next week if you have any. And of course, if you think of something during the week, you can drop a comment in the Facebook Live video. It's going to not go away for like a month. I think Facebook keeps it for like a month now.
Yeah.
They used to keep them forever, but they got rid of that. So anyway, we'll be there for you. And of course, on demand, we keep that for as long as we can on the archives on WESB.com.
Great.
So you can hear the show that way. So thanks again to Worth W. Smith, and we will see you again next week. Bob, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
It's The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.